D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. We're expecting Willie Donick shortly. The Predators are in Boston to take on the Bruins tonight. Puck drop at 6, pregame at 5, right here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Before we get to Derek Mason's top wide receiver draft prospects, our friend Mark from Nashville is on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Mark, my friend, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
I appreciate that, Adam. What's up, D-Mace?
Hey, what's going on?
Oh, not a whole lot, man. Just calling to chat with y'all for a minute. I was sitting there listening to y'all, man, talk about Sam Darnold. Man, I'm kind of under the thinking that he's like a one-year wonder, one-hit wonder, rather. I don't know if he could just go in and figure any offense out and be successful at it. I think his success was this past season with the Vikings. I mean, you got Jones, Hockenson, Addison, Jefferson, O'Connell as an offensive guru. I think that's the best you're going to see of him. I don't see it happening with him. Maybe he can go to Pittsburgh and Arthur Smith can, you know, keep him going in the right direction and keep him going. But I just wouldn't overpay for Sam Darnold. I wouldn't really see him coming here to Nashville. I think Aaron Rodgers is probably your last long bet to get down here in Nashville. All the other quarterbacks are being taken. But AD Mays, before I go, I'm just going to ask you a quick question. Have you got Luther Burden, the wideout from Missouri, on that list anywhere? Yes or no? I mean, can you kind of give me a hint? Or do you got the number one wide receiver? For some reason, D-Mays, I can't even pronounce this guy's name. I'm well versed. Can't figure his name out, from Arizona.
Oh, just call him Tet McMillan. Just call him Tet McMillan. That's what everybody calls him.
Oh, okay then. Okay, well, I'll just do that then. But, yeah.
No spoilers, Mark. You'll have to listen like everybody else.
We love you, man, but I can't spoil it, man, because people got to hear it. So I can't spoil it for him, man.
Well, I mean, D-Mace, hey, the check's coming your way, man. It'll be in your account this evening. All you got to do is tell me, man. But it's coming your way.
I think you'll like my list.
We'll get to it right now, Mark, so you won't have to wait too long.
All right. See y'all, Adam. See you, D-Mace. Yep. Appreciate it, fellas.
Thanks, Mark. All right. So let's take a look. Actually, before we get to that, one texter said, a couple of texts about Sam Darnold before we get to this list. One texter says on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, I don't understand why everyone is so high on Sam Darnold. He has had one good season in his NFL career, and that was behind arguably the best offensive line in the league with the best wide receiver in the league. If he comes to the Titans, he will do nothing because we do not have an offensive line or the wide receivers he had. One texter says Rodgers wouldn't last a quarter behind that offensive line. Aaron Rodgers, that is. Another texter says, how many quarterbacks have had 14 win seasons in aid of fluke? I remain skeptical of Sam Darnold. I am not saying that his season, minus the final two games, was not impressive. And again, I am required by law to mention that Sam Darnold went 4-2 as a starter near the end of the 2022 season with the Carolina Panthers.
Can't forget that part.
We can't forget that part. What I will say is, again, I remain skeptical about Sam Darnold, what he would do in another situation. Again, not taking away from what he did with the Vikings. But I look at that period of time with the Panthers, that 4-2 stretch. And I'm not saying it wasn't impressive, but it doesn't blow me away. Mm-hmm. I don't sit there and go, wow, he went 4-2 for that Panthers team when the games were basically meaningless. I mean, I guess they weren't totally meaningless because they were playing in the NFC South, which was one, I believe, with a 8-9 record. I want to say, but, you know, I don't look at that as some huge deal that he went 4-2 with the Panthers. I just remain, again, I remain skeptical that on another team, or specifically on the Titans, that Sam Darnold will be the quarterback that won 14 games. But we will park Sam Darnold there for a moment. So let's get to these top wide receiver prospects, Derek. You have given me four names. Mm-hmm. You've done your research. You looked through all of the combine stuff for those who did participate in the combine. So we'll go one by one here. The first name you gave me was Emeka Egbuka from Ohio State University, considering the incredible wide receivers who have played for that school, including Chris Sanders, despite the fact that his diploma
he doesn't count anymore.
His diploma has been burned because of that one time he picked Michigan over. He was right to pick Michigan over Ohio State, instantly underdog picks. But you lose your membership card to Ohio State if you ever pick Michigan over Ohio State. Nevertheless, Egbuka finished his career at Ohio State the career leader in receptions and receiving yards. That's impressive, considering what, considering the caliber of receivers that have played for Ohio State. So Emeka Egbuka was the first name you gave me. What do you like about him and his NFL prospects?
And it's not that Emeka Egbuka is my first top on my board. It's just how I was looking at the guys. And I started with Emeka Egbuka and sort of finished with some other guys. But this is what I wrote about him. Great hands. He attacks the football. Really good speed. He's a physical runner. He's a combat catcher. He catches a lot of passes when guys are draped over him, even in double coverage. He's a diverse route runner. And what I mean by that, he runs every route in the route tree. There's not like, oh, he's only a deep threat or he's an underneath guy. No. Egbuka runs every route in a route tree, and that's what makes him so dangerous, is that you can't sit back and say, well, I'm going to sit on this because this is what. No, he, just as quickly as he will run a out, he will run a go on you, and it will look the same. He understands spacing, and what I mean by that, he's a zone buster. He's one of those guys that reads and recognizes zone very quickly, and he finds the open space. He's sort of like that. He's sort of like Jamar Chase in a sense. Jamar Chase is really good at finding the holes in the zones very quickly. And Emeka Egbuka is the same way. Excellent, really good speed, gets the ball and get up the field north and south. He is a north-south runner, and he has explosion. So that's when I look at Egbuka, that's what I see. And he's a physical guy when he needs to be. So he's first on my list. He's not my first wide receiver, but how I sort of evaluate these guys, I went with Egbuka first. And I think he may be the oldest of the group in a sense of, because he played at Ohio State, what, this is his third year? Tet might be a little bit older, but I think this is his third year, or it may be his senior year at Ohio State. He's one of those guys that probably stayed the duration of his 4 years, and that helped him. Staying more than 3 years at Ohio State.
He played four seasons at Ohio State.
So that helped him. And then being able to still shine all while having Jeremiah Smith on the other side of you. So I think that was an added plus. I think he comes in and can be an immediate impact player for you, just like a Chase, just like a Olave, those guys that formerly came from Ohio State. So that's how I see Egbuka.
All right, so Emeka Egbuka was one of the four prospects you had on your list at wide receiver. Mm. Number two, someone who's gotten a lot of play because of his performance at the 40 at the combine, Matthew Golden out of Texas ran a 4.29 40, which was the fastest recorded at the combine. What do you like about Matthew Golden other than the speed, of
course? Other than speed, this is how, and everybody fell in love with Matthew Golden. TD and I were talking about Golden and Bond a few weeks ago. And at the time, I thought Bond would be the faster runner. But it turns out that Matthew Golden is the fastest guy based upon his 4.29 40. But again, this is what I seen that popped off for me. He's a dynamic player. He's just flat-out dynamic. That's just who he is. He's explosive. He may be the most explosive receiver in this year's draft. He attacks the football. He's a I'm dude. That's what he is. He's an I'm dude when it comes to the football. You know what I'm dudes are?
No.
It's mine. That ball is mine. And that's the way he attacks it each and every time. I'm an I'ms dude. That ball you see in the air, I don't care if it's double covered. It's my ball, and I'm catching it. So he's one of those guys. He's really good at route running. He has the quickness. He catches while contact very well, just like Abuka. He's a contact catcher, and he's really and this is what I think puts him, to me, over the edge. He's a returner. He can do kickoff returns. I didn't see him do many punt returns from what I see. I need to go a little bit deeper. But I know he can double as your kickoff return, especially with how the rules are now. You need a guy, a speed guy, that can hit the hole and go. And he's one of those guys. So when I look at Matthew Golden, he is, based upon what I watched on film, and then mirroring that with his 4.29 40, I think his hand size were a little bit, is like 9, close to 10. So he has large hands, and he's just, he has everything that you're, and when you're talking about a prototypical wide receiver, he has it all. Now, will that translate in the NFL? I don't know. But what he has shown throughout college, the film that I watch, and I watched every touch of his or target of his this season, this dude is a flat-out playmaker. He is. And I'm not surprised that he ran a 4.2 because he looks that fast on film.
He ran a 4.29 40. His hand measurements, 9.5.
9.5, yeah.
9.5. He ran a 1.49 10-yard split as well. Those were the only two drills, I believe, he ran at the combine. So one texter says, we need Golden. That dude's legit. Now, I don't think Matthew Golden is going to be available to the Titans unless they were to trade down, because they're not taking Matthew Golden at the top of the draft. And you're not taking Matthew Golden if they trade down with the Giants, for example, at 3. Like, if they were to trade down and maybe trade down again, you know, maybe they can get, maybe that's the right place for Golden. But a lot of people are high on him. All right, the third receiver on your list, you mentioned him when Mark called in, Tet McMillan, who has been, I feel like, he's been one of those names that's been at the top of the wide receiver draft prospect board for a while. But what do you like about Tet McMillan out of Arizona?
Okay, this was a conversation that I had about Tet McMillan. And this person says, he gives me soft vibes. I wonder how he do versus press coverage, like Snead, guys that love to get up in your face. And then I responded, he's not explosive, but he has a big frame. And then they said, well, he reminds them a lot of DJ Moore, a lot of Yak, which he does. And I watched film of him twice, because the first time I watched, I may not have been as in tune as I should have been. It may have been a little bit late, and I was watching him. And I'm 51 years old. After a while, my eyes get tired. And I came back, and I'm like, man, there's just something about this guy. Like, he does it. He has a big frame, but And then I said, okay, let me go back and watch it. So I went back and watched the film. And first thing that came to mind is Mike Evans. That's the first thing that came to mind, Mike Evans. Stature, the way he runs his routes, his ability to go up and get the ball, attack the ball, that big frame. He doesn't have explosiveness. He doesn't have that. And neither does Mike Evans. But I think he makes up for it. He has good speed, but he makes up for it with this big frame. Here's what I put about him. Has some Mike Evans in him. Good speed, high points the ball. He's a combat catcher as well. He's a guy that in double coverage and sometimes triple, he can go up and get the ball because of his big frame. And then I said he can throw the ball as well. I think he ended up throwing a touchdown or two during the year. So he not only can he run routes, catch the football, but you can use him with your gimmick plays. He can throw the ball down the field with some accuracy. So that, along with him being a big body guy, I would have liked, you know, I don't know. I don't even know if he ran the 40 at the combine. I need to take a look, but I don't.
I don't believe he.
Yeah, I don't think he. To me, if he runs a 4.5, a sub 4.4, then I think he's a top 10 pick. If he doesn't run that, I think he's still a top. I think he's a first round pick, but he may slip down in the draft. But he has all those traits that it's hard to pass up. If you watch this guy, he's Mike Evans. And y'all know how much I like Mike Evans as a player. If you can get a Mike Evans, draft him. Not high, and you're not drafting the top 10, 12 picks. But if he runs a sub 4.4, you may think about it. You know, but this is a – he's more in line with Mike Evans than I think anybody else in this year's draft. And I got a couple of more guys on here. One guy that I'm two guys, but one guy I'm really intrigued about.
By the way, McMillan measures 6'4", 219 pounds.
So he's a big guy.
He did not run the 40 at the combine.
Yeah, I need to see him run a 40. If he can – watching on film, he has good speed, solid speed. But he has good speed on film. But I want to see it in the 40. I want to see, okay, what I'm seeing. Because right now I see him as a 4.5 guy, a high 4.4, 4.5. If he runs 4.41, 4.42, I think he's more inclined to go in the top 10.
615-737-1025. So that's the beginning of Derek's list. He has Emeka Egbuka from Ohio State, Matthew Golden from Texas, and Tet McMillan out of Arizona. He's got a couple of more prospects, maybe a couple that could be available to the Titans at some point, maybe on day two. We'll get to that next. If you have any thoughts on it, 615-737-1025. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, Adonic, 1025-1063, The Game. If we're playing shipping up to Boston, does that mean we have Willie Donick? No. Huh. I thought that was a tell right
Not
there.
Not yet.
I just wanted to play it.
Okay, well, I mean, it's fitting. The Predators play the Bruins tonight in Boston. I thought that was Willie's entrance music there for a second. Apparently, he's bringing, when he comes on the program, he's bringing a special guest. Uh-huh. We won't spoil it, mm-hmm. But he's bringing a special guest along when he starts the show. All right, Derek.
Yes.
We've been talking about wide receivers. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Emeka Egbuka out of Ohio State. You mentioned Matthew Golden out of Texas. And you've mentioned Tet McMillan out of Arizona. There are some other prospects you have on your list. Who's next?
Okay. Now, this prospect sort of, he became a prospect after the combine. And obviously, you know, when you run a 40 and it's eye-popping, people start to pay attention. And Dante Thornton Jr., is a guy
out of Tennessee
that was the talk, and he's a Maryland native
from Baltimore. Yep.
Absolutely, so big ups to him.
Shall be more
exactly, but now there's some buzz going on with Dante Thornton, and rightfully so. When you're that big at 6'5", and you run that fast, now his vertical didn't correlate with his 40. He vertical inch was 33. You would love to see that higher, especially from a guy that runs a 4.3. It's like the explosiveness should be there in the vertical as well, but it does, for whatever reason, it doesn't correlate. It didn't correlate with his 40. Didn't match his vertical. But I watched him. I watched film of him last night because he's one of the hot topics outside of Matthew Golden. He's another guy that is sort of climbing in the charts, and I was intrigued by him. For this reason, he reminds me, I look at him, and it's not a DK Metcalf. It's not, because I think DK is just a bigger, more explosive guy. And it seems like DK puts fear in a defensive back. Like, this guy's going to, you know, beat me up on the line of scrimmage if I press him. He gives off those type of vibes. Dante doesn't, but he has the big stature and the speed to go with it. He reminds me more of a Tyrone Calico than a DK Metcalf.
You're reaching back for that one.
Yes, because Tyrone, big, you know, fast out of MTSU. Big fast. He killed his pro day or the combine, and that's what had him soaring in the draft. Rarely do you see a 6'5 guy running a sub 4'4 or 4'3, and Tyrone was able to do it. Now, for whatever reason, injury was a part of it. It never did match up to where he can play consistent football. And ultimately, he played a few years, and that was it. I'm not saying that Dante Thornton's going to be Tyrone Calico, but it sort of reminds me. And then I go back and I look at the film, and I go back and I look at the numbers. Half of his numbers, he had 600-and-some yards, averaged a whopping 25 yards per catch, damn, with 6 touchdowns. Half of those yardage came against UTC, Mississippi State, and our very own Vanderbilt, the Commodores. Now, Vandy, they turned out to be a good team, but their defense more than likely wasn't stopping people every week from scoring points. Now, Vandy found ways to win games, and rightfully so, but their defense let them down more times than not. But they were better than they were the previous year. But half of your yardage came against those teams. You had a good game versus Alabama, 3 for 70, with one long catch, and then the other mediums. You had the longest of 55, and then everything else was intermediate. I don't know how he's going to present himself against top competition. You know, I don't know, because was it the system that didn't allow for the numbers, or was it the person? You know, the system is supposed to allow for guys to catch a bunch of balls. That's what we've seen from that offense over the last 2 years prior to this season. Guys catching a bunch of balls, guys raising their stock in the draft. We've seen it with our own eyes. For this year, it didn't happen that way. Maybe it was because of the quarterback was young. I don't know. But you didn't pop off on the screen throughout the season other than 3 times, and maybe that 4th against Alabama when you had the longer 55 yards. Now, you had a longer 66 against Oklahoma, but you had 2 catches. 2 catches. So I don't know. He's one of those guys that you draft in the 3rd round. He's a developmental guy. You got to develop him because he doesn't have an extensive route catalog or route tree that you saw. It was either post or ends or quick throws to the outside. That's what it was. So I want to see more of him. You know, he's a developmental guy in the sense of he has the tangibles. More importantly, he's big and he's fast. He has good hands. But I want to see him now develop into a wide receiver. I'm not taking him in the 1st round. I may reach for him late in the 2nd, but he's a 3rd round guy to me.
6'5", 205 pounds, hand size 9 5/8". Ran a 4.3 40 right behind Matthew Golden, who ran 4.29. Had a 33-inch vertical jump at the combine. One texter, Caleb, says, as a Tennessee fan, don't fall for the 40 time, D-Mace.
And I know, and that's why I said what I said. Like, he didn't pop up on the screen, in that offense, but 3 or 4 times during the season. And it wasn't against true top competition that he popped out. Again, I'm not saying he won't ultimately turn into a really good wide receiver, but he's one of those guys that you're going to have to develop. He's going to have to develop.
Let's stay in the SEC. Another popular name among wide receiver prospects, Luther Byrd in the 3rd, out of Missouri. Now, I actually found this to be interesting, Derek. Mm-hmm. Jordan Reed had his latest 2-round mock draft on ESPN.com this morning. And as part of his mock draft, he had a trade between the Titans and the Giants, where the Giants move up to number 1. In his mock trade, he has the Giants giving the Titans their 2nd-round pick. At number 34. And at number 34, Jordan Reed has the Titans selecting Luther Burden. Now, when I saw this, I was kind of shocked because I thought Luther Burden would be a 1st-round prospect. Mm-hmm. He's a top of the 2nd-round prospect here, according to Jordan Reed. But Luther Burden the 3rd, out of Missouri, how does he stack up to you?
Again, I'm going to go back to a original text here. I said you had to draft a wide receiver, would you go with T-Mac or Tet McMillan or Luther Burden III? Watching a little film on both and Luther pops, multiple type player. He said, I like Burden. Go watch the 23 tape. It's much better. Yeah, the 23 tape is much better because the numbers decline in 24 for whatever reason. I don't know. But he does pop out. He's quick. He's elusive. He catches the ball well. Now, he did have some lapses where he had some drops where I'm like that was just a lack of concentration. You know, you got to do better at that. But other than that, he popped. He has good speed. He catches the ball well. He's multiple. Again, this is another one of these guys that is multiple. You can do the way the NFL is using wide receivers, especially a wide receiver with his skill set. They're motioning them. They're giving them those quick flip passes. They're throwing it out to the boundary very quickly to him after he goes in motion, or they're throwing that quick hitch to him. They're getting him the ball in multiple ways. That's what Missouri did with him last year and the year prior, is they gave him the ball in multiple ways. And he was successful at that. I don't know why his numbers dipped to what they did this season, but he still looks explosive on film. And also what's a plus for him, he's a returner. Another guy for a team that is dying and begging for a guy that can catch the ball and get some yardage and get up the field. And I'm talking about from a special team standpoint. What we've seen in our returners the last couple of years hasn't been good. They need a guy like Luther Burden III or like Matthew Golden that not only can be, you know, either a number one wide receiver or your number – he can be amongst your top three wide receivers, but also he can double as your returner. As well, and he can do a really good job at that. So I look at Luther Burden, and he's one of those second day guys that, hey, listen, I wouldn't mind if you felt you got what you needed in the first round, and you're in a position and the receivers are going off, the top receivers are going off the board, and he's still there in the second round, I wouldn't be opposed to them moving up. Now, I wouldn't move up like eight or nine spots. No, move up a spot or two. If you traded, but say if you traded out the first round, we traded out the first pick, moved down, and then traded some picks and sort of got some extra picks and moved back in the second round. Well, you can move up a spot or two to get him, or if you see him falling, now you can try to make a trade to move further down if you see the teams in front of you don't have a need for wide receivers and still be able to get a guy you're able to get a guy that can be a day one starter, and when I mean starter in the three wide receiver set, but you can get him late in the second round.
I understand that Willie Donick is here. Hello, Willie.
Hello, gentlemen.
You sound a little, like you had about eight cups of coffee, a little chippy, cheery today.
It's a beautiful day in Boston, and I got a chance to see my family here. My parents. Just had lunch with them, and they're heading back to, and my daughter, who's going to be graduating from Northeastern University here across downtown. Mm-hmm.
Right up the street from Boston U. So,
right down the street from where old DJ.
Absolutely. Yes,
DJ Mason. So they were rivals. Northeastern mm-hmm. and BU are the big rivals there. So they were not far from each other for a while. Of course, DJ's already graduated, mm-hmm. so Evie will be joining the graduation crew at Fenway Park in May. So looking forward to that. And Evie
Congrats.
Is going to make it in a few minutes. She's seeing off my parents. They're heading back home. They live up in upstate New York, mm-hmm. a couple hours away. But she has some very interesting research that she's done on the Gatorade.
Did you in any way influence her?
I did not, and you'll see her findings are, and then you guys can put it in there with all of your evidence and research. Even though the case is closed, I'm not reopening the case.
I'm not sounds like trying to.
New trial.
It sounds like you are, Willie.
I think this is just an interesting knowledge of what the people feel in the aftermath of our spirited discussion on is lemon lime Gatorade. Yellow or green.
The bit that will never die. Yellow / green Gatorade. So Derek has unveiled his top wide receiver prospects in this year's draft. Let us know what you think about it. That's 615-737-1025. If there is a wide receiver that you would like the Titans to target in the draft, let us know. Again, 615-737-1025. We'll be right back. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, The Game. D-Maze, Fingan, and Donick, 1025, 1063, The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. All right, Willie. Let us hear about your daughter's take on the Gatorade situation. I know she's there. Let her into this conversation.
Okay. So Evie heard me being harassed by my
Harassed is strong. Harassed,
that's harassed a strong is strong. Word, Willie. I see you setting the table already.
A point in our take it to the bank contest. I was very disappointed, distraught. She saw this. So she picked up the conversation. I showed her the bottle of Gatorade. And so she decided to try to do some further research. So Evie's sitting right here. So Evie, tell me what you found. What was your findings?
So I took this debate to Instagram and asked some of my friends whether or not they thought the Gatorade was yellow or green. And overwhelmingly, people chose yellow. The four votes for green include Willie Donick. And yeah, it's looking like the overall consensus is that lemon lime Gatorade is yellow.
So Evie, did he in any way try to sort of nudge you to thinking that was green and as opposed to yellow? Did he try to coerce you in any way? Yeah.
No, not really. I mean,
you're on the witness stand now.
He made his argument, but it was, I don't think he has a very strong case, unfortunately. So it was not convincing.
Well, Evie, we appreciate the fact that you are not siding with your dad just because he's your flesh and blood.
Exactly.
We appreciate you having a clear mind about this. To be honest with you, I'm surprised. I thought by Willie bringing you on, it was going to be you telling us that it was green. But not only did you tell us it was yellow, it was overwhelmingly yellow.
Mm. Only four people thought it was green.
Yeah.
And one of them was Willie.
Here are the stats. You know how we love the stats on this show. Mm-hmm. Evie, at the close of voting yesterday, when you first – what was the count? Not the percentage, but what was the count at the end of yesterday?
Let's look here. At the end of yesterday, it was 30 to nothing. Dad was 0 for 30. With the votes.
Wow.
That says a lot.
Wow. That is a crushing.
You can just imagine the dejection that I felt, man, from her friends, her close friends on Instagram that all voted against me. 30 to nothing.
Well, Willie, I hope that has concluded you ever trying to bring this case back up to the Supreme Court, okay?
And this confirms that our ruling that you lose your quarter of a point was within sound reason. So thank you, Evie, for doing
exactly.
The work for us.
Appreciate it.
We weren't able to convince Willie, but it sounds like you were. So thank you very much.
My pleasure, guys.
All right. We can put this to bed, finally. Yes.
I'm dying on the Lime Hill.
Yeah,
I'm
going to
die
are.
On the Lime Hill. Maybe I should do the show from Green Hills.
That's the only green you're getting, buddy.
I thought there might
take
be
a
some
picture of me.
I thought there might be some green changing hands from Willie to his daughter,
exactly.
And trying to coerce her. Maybe my friend Mr. Washington can convince you that this Gatorade is great.
Benjamin.
Benji's, that's what we care.
So, Willie, we
I feel
heard.
Like I need to get checked.
We heard from Derek, his top wide receiver prospects. I know you joined in that conversation as it was going on. But what did you make of Derek's wide receiver prospect leaderboard there?
Well, I trust D-Mace in his evaluation. So, D. Mace, I know sometimes you're looking at technical things, and you're looking at, you know, some of the metrics that you get at the combine. So I just want to get your sense of what you value more. Do you value the production more, or what things are do you prioritize when you're going through your evaluation process?
One, durability. That's first and foremost. I think in today's game, you have to show a level of durability. You have to be able to play through things. So if I'm a scout, I'm looking at all of that first. Is he on the field more times than not? Can you count on him? And then two, I think it's not what is your playing speed? Because your playing speed in your 40-yard dash can look a little bit different. That's what I talked about with Tet McMillan, that I wanted to see, like, on film it looks like he has good speed, but I want to see if that matches his 40. Like, to me, good speed for a guy 6'5" is around a sub, you know, maybe a 4.5 to a 4.45 in between there. That's good speed. Now, if he runs faster than that, then he shoots up in the draft, and he may shoot up over Matthew Golden if he can run a low 4.4, like a 4.4 flat somewhere around there. He just may, and that's because of his size and size only. But he would sort of match him with the speed. So that's what I'm looking for. Does his 40 match his playing speed? And then in today's game, especially in the NFL, you got to make combative catches. You have to. This league is too fast, too physical. Guys are too good. You're not getting completely open like you were in college. Are you a good combative catcher? And to me, the guys that I talked about, they are. They catch the ball well when others are around. So those are things that I'm looking for. And then also, you know, one of the things is, are you a returner? Because I think really good returners can become really good pass catchers, to great pass catchers. Because the vision you have to have as a returner, the ability to make the cuts, to get in and out, to see a hole, hit it, and go north and south. That's what we talk about a lot as a receiver, getting north and south. Don't mess around going side to side because you're allowing everybody to converge on you. As a punt returner, you're usually going north to south. And if you're good at that, you can catch the ball well, it usually translates when you have the ball in your hands as a wide receiver. You're thinking more north-south than anything. So those are some of the things that I'm looking at, you know, when I'm evaluating the receiver, how he gets in and out of his breaks, how he's seeing the field as he's moving. Is he running full speed as he's seeing the field, or is he kind of coasting, trying to figure it out? I want a guy that can go full speed and still be able to read the field as you're running, because it's not what you see before the ball is high, it's what you see after that. Teams usually are rotating in the back end. So if you're able to play full speed and yet and still read the defense, that's why I look at a guy like Matthew Golden as a zone buster, because he's reading it as he's running full speed and he's finding open holes within the defense. Because, listen, in college, they're not playing much man-to-man because they just don't have the athletes to do that on a game-in and game-out basis. They're in a lot of zones. So if you can read that zone very quickly, find spaces and holes in there, that's a plus for me. Those are the things that I'm looking for.
Willie, we had Tim Hasselbeck on earlier in the program, talked about the news of Sam Darnold unlikely to be franchise-tagged by the Minnesota Vikings. That deadline, by the way, is 3:00 Central, so fast approaching. And I asked him the question, if it were up to you, well, let me rephrase that. I asked him the question, who would be better, who is going to be better 3 years from now, Sam Darnold or Cam Ward? And he sided with Sam Darnold because he's shown he can do it at the NFL level. He's still young. There's a lot of tantalizing aspects of Cam Ward. We heard Teron Davenport yesterday. The Titans are high on Cam Ward. A lot of teams seem to be high on Cam Ward. But he would rather put his stock in Darnold, knowing that Darnold has shown he could do it at the NFL level. I want to get your thoughts on that.
I I'm still not sure that this was a smart move by the Vikings, in my opinion, to not tag Darnold. I think it's a little risky to put all your faith in J.J. McCarthy for a team that, you know, did some really encouraging things last year, and now you don't really know exactly what you're going to get from quarterback play. So on the flip side, if you're a team looking for a quarterback and you see that the Vikings don't keep Sam Darnold, what does that say about what they think of Sam Darnold? I'm not sure then I'm ready to turn around and overpay to get what it's going to take to sign him. So with Stafford and Carr staying put and Darnold hitting the free agent market, I think he's in a great position to get way overpaid, which may not be the best thing for Sam Darnold, right? But as we talked about yesterday, the key dynamic for the Titans, I think, is either you love Cam Ward so much that you can't pass him up, or two, three, four other teams looking for a quarterback get enticed with Cam Ward and overpay you for the first pick. To me, that's what the Titans should be shooting for, because I still am skeptical that any first pick in the draft, unless he is, I'm not going to use the G word, not going to do it.
Can't do it.
Nope.
Can't do it. Not allowed to do it. But if he's that special, that's one thing. But if he's just, for lack of a better term, your run-of-the-mill best quarterback available, and quarterbacks usually get picked high, those quarterbacks tend to have a rough time going into a situation where the Titans are with their roster. It's not a great position to succeed. So I'm looking to build leverage for the first overall pick.
Certainly sounds like the Giants are the team that most people peg as the one that will move up from 3-1 with the Titans. So we'll see how desperate they are.
I think some others might join the party before it's all over. If the Cam Ward, what the music to my ears, if I'm the Titans, is that Cam Ward's stock appeared to really go up during the combine. That's what you want. You want momentum. You want everybody talking about him. You want other teams to jump in and say, hey, what would it take for us to get Cam Ward?
615-737-1025. Speaking of deadlines, we've talked about the franchise tag deadline, which is in about 2 hours. 3 days from now, it's the NHL trade deadline. The Predators have already made one move. Who could be next out the door? Some comments from our very good friend, Elliot Freeman. We'll discuss those next. Willie Dunick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.